It's time for the MMA Insiders.
Yes, we are back an extra hour tonight, as we always do on Thursdays, the MMA Insiders. Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Brett Okamoto from ESPN. ESPN, ESPN.com, it's all the same. It's all family.
I think it's all the same.
It's good. You may know him better as TK Okamoto. That's how I like to refer to him. But no Steve Cofield this week. We are with you for the next hour, breaking down everything going on in the world of MMA. Brett, very observant guy. Noticed all the wind going on today.
Yeah. Braving the weather just to make it over here. And then I don't have a key to get into the building, so I'm just standing outside. Not like it's, you know, deathly winds outside.
No, no trees blew over on you or anything?
I was just waiting for it, you know?
Well, let's...
Seeking shelter wherever I could until I could get one of you to answer a text to come let me in the building.
That's a good idea. But luckily we have you, and we can get into everything going on in the world of MMA, as we said. And we start with some very interesting developments, I think, in some big fights on the horizon. We'll go with the Bisping-GSP fight, which was announced. I think that they're going to fight at some point for the middleweight title. Bisping is now saying, hey, if GSP's not ready in July, that's when I want the fight, then I'm fighting somebody else. That's not going to happen, right? These are just empty threats. He's throwing them out there to try to make GSP take the fight.
Of course, yes, they're empty threats.
Yeah.
I mean, what he's saying is, I'm being told that GSP wants to wait until September, October, and that doesn't work for me, buddy.
is that your Bisping impression?
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Have you been working on it?
I can only do the one word.
Buddy.
But it's just when I read the word buddy from his Bisping, I can hear him say it.
I like it.
And he wants to fight sooner, and I don't blame him. It's been a while since he's fought, and it would be a year if he waited until the fall.
I guess the biggest risk if you do wait, because you can wait till the fall. Wait until the fall is not a problem. Like, it sucks. It's not ideal. But it's not a problem if you say, hey, we're going to fight in July, now we're going to fight September, even perhaps October. The issue is if you wait and then for whatever reason the fight doesn't happen then. If George St. Pierre pulls out of the fight then, now you've been waiting for a year, now you didn't take a fight for that whole time, and now you have to wait even longer. I think that's where the issue comes in.
Yeah, well, I think Bisping is a guy who, he's a champion for one, and also he's not a guy who's just going to sit idly by. He's a guy who talks about what he wants and makes it known what he wants. Now, whether or not he'll get what he wants, I mean, I still think it's up to GSP. And I don't believe Bisping that he says he's willing to get just, all right, well, I'm going to move on to Yoel Romero. I don't believe that for a second. And B, I don't even know if he can, because it's my understanding, I won't say necessarily understanding, but when you read the tea leaves of this and you're looking between the lines, George St. Pierre is coming back believing that his first fight is going to be for the middleweight championship against Michael Bisping.
Right.
So it's not really Bisping's call if that's the case. If that's already the arrangement, it's unfortunately for Bisping, and it's kind of crazy because he's the champion, but it's not even his call. There's higher powers, the B, and they've decided you're fighting GSP. We want it to happen in July. The UFC has already said they want it to happen in July, but if for some reason GSP is unavailable, they're not just going to be like, all right, Bisping versus Romero headlining the International Fight Week card here in Las Vegas. It's Bisping trying to get what he wants and doing what he can to get what he wants, but they are totally empty threats.
Yeah, and at that point, you know, you do not normally have to deal with St. Pierre thinking that his fight was going to be against Bisping for the title. Then you get Romero winning the title. I think most people would assume that. Then what happens with, does St. Pierre, I doubt, would want to fight him? Does he go to 170? What does he do there? I guess what Bisping could do is go fight. He can't get to 170 though, so I was thinking he could fight Woodley. Woodley would have to come up. He wouldn't be able to go down. So I guess they could do like a catch weight between champions. I guess that would be the one option, because then Bisping would still have the title, and then he could still defend it against GSP regardless of the outcome, and you could just have a super fight.
I guess I never say never anymore, because it's just crazy things seem to be happening a lot recently, but I don't even know if this is worth talking about, because it's just Bisping on his own podcast putting forth like something that he hopes works in his favor, but it's not real to me. You know, I mean, we can sit here and talk about like everything that might happen if Bisping doesn't fight GSP next. But I'm pretty much it's written, you know, in ink in my mind that okay, Bisping's fighting GSP next. So I guess I just have a hard time speculating about. Well, I mean, of course, sure, Woodley would love to move up in weight. I guess maybe fight for Bisping's title. Maybe
the same thing happens then if he fights for the title.
Can you imagine the outcry in that though? I mean, not only is Romero getting passed up by GSP, then now he's getting passed up by Woodley, coming off of the fight that Woodley just had against Stephen Thompson. This is ridiculous.
it's very fun, very fun. So we expect to see Bisping St. Pierre, whether that's in July as the UFC and Bisping would want, or September October when George St. Pierre would want. Which I imagine George St. Pierre wins that battle. Because he's George St. Pierre for the reasons that you talked about. Like, he's the guy in this fight. He's the one. He's the A side. And so if he wants it in September and October, it's probably going to be in September, October, I think.
Yeah.
We shall see. So that is coming up on the horizon. Another fight that could be coming up on the horizon. We don't know. And we always have to talk a little bit about it. Even though I think I hate it and you hate it, it's always fun. There's always some developments in Connor and Floyd. I guess, are we in the same place we were a week ago? I think I'm up to, like, I don't know, 75% at this point that it happens. Is that about where we are?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Probably about the right number because, again, the UFC seems to have gotten out of the way. Now, we kind of hear whispers that what they want is just 50% of whatever Conor gets, which would be a lot of money. But then that goes into the negotiations, too, of... how much does Conor need now if the UFC is getting half of what he was going to make? And that does take the UFC out as a third party potentially. So I think there's just, even though there's a ton of money, and what you hear is when there's this much money at stake, it's going to happen somehow. That's not always the case because it does become tough. Because even if it was, say it was $500 million, all right, you're getting $500 million and Conor's getting $500 million. And then Floyd says, nah, I don't want to get the same amount. I need to get more, even if it's $500 million. And the number's not 500, but I think no matter what number it is, it still becomes a tough negotiation just because of the egos involved in what percentage of that huge amount do you get.
It's the same thing we've been saying this entire time. What makes this deal difficult? You have three enormous egos.
Yeah.
Three, not just two. And you have a promotion that has a history of not even really wanting to see a fighter get paid that much. So there's another element to it. It makes it difficult, but what makes it possible is that there might be that much money to go around for this thing.
Yeah. So we're going to see crazy numbers thrown around. We're going to see all kinds of negotiation ploys being thrown around. In the end, I still believe now it's going to happen, but you know, we shall see how it all develops. But the thing I wanted to talk about is that we see different little developments all the time in this fight. And every time anybody makes any comment, it's a huge story. But this week, one of the comments was from John Kavanaugh, coach of Conor McGregor, who said, just because he gets this big payday, Conor is not going to walk away and retire. I think most people assume that, but I have heard that, and I've thought about that as well, that if Conor gets, say, $150 million for this fight, or $100 million, or whatever he's going to get, at that point, it would be pretty easy to just be like, I got all I need. I'm done.
Well, here is where fight fans need to be honest with themselves. And for a long time, we were all saying that fighters need to be paid more. They're not paid enough. They don't make a big enough share of the pie, a fair share of the pie. Once they do, it kind of ruins things to a certain extent. Because I don't think that Conor would just walk away entirely, but this like fantasy of him being a lightweight champion and taking on all comers, that doesn't exist.
No.
And
I agree.
And what's great as a fight fan, that seeing Conor McGregor defend that lightweight championship against one killer after another, that as a fan is what you want to see. But if he's making that much money, he's not doing what he used to do, and that's fight three times a year and take on anybody and everybody. I think he would, let's say he fights Floyd, let's say he makes a boatload of money. I think he would fight again, but what are the fights that would interest him? Trilogy fight with Nate Diaz, potentially. George St. Pierre. You know, depending on what happens with George. It's not Tony Ferguson.
Yeah.
It's not Khabib Nurmagomedov. It's not whatever lightweight happens to rise to the top in his absence. It's none of those, which sucks because I want to see Conor fight the best. He's a special talent that came along, and I feel like we didn't even get to really appreciate him. He fought Aldo, and it lasted 13 seconds. He fought Eddie Alvarez. It was a terrible style matchup for Eddie, and Eddie was terrible in that fight. And then he fought twice against Nate Diaz. There's just so many more chapters that could be written in McGregor's fight history, and I just don't think we'll really get many of the good ones, unfortunately. I hope I'm wrong. You know, maybe this guy is just so competitive and so driven that he will take some of those tough fights just because, you know, he has that element that maybe Floyd didn't, and that was that he won't just always look for the easiest fight because he has the competitive drive.
He has it for now. I think you're 100% right on, and the way that I've looked at it is, like, I don't think he would walk away. But again, and one of the things Kavanaugh said when he said I don't think he'd retire is everybody has a shelf life, and you know, I think what that amount of money does is drastically reduces your shelf life of how long you want to be going through this. It is a grind. It absolutely is. Every time you go out, and Conor's talked about how, you know, it wears you down, the not only the fights, the promotion, the training camp, everything else, and how motivated are you going to be if you all of a sudden have exponentially more money than you ever thought you'd be able to make? I mean, he said from the beginning, I'm going to make this, I'm going to take over this and do this. But at some point, if you get a, let's just throw out $100 million payday, that changes everything about your drive and your desire. And why would you want to go through a fight against a guy like you mentioned, you know, Ferguson and Nurmagomedov are grinding, like just awful fights to prepare for and to go through, and they're battles. And why would you want to do that for guys that aren't gonna make you nearly what you made in this fight, or what you would make fighting Nate Diaz again, or you know, fighting potentially. I mean, George St. Pierre is not an easy fight, but it's a different kind of fight, and it's like that would be one to get hugely motivated for because it'd be a massive payday if St. Pierre has won a couple of fights after he's come back. So, yeah, I think for all those reasons, you're not going to see that same "I'll fight anybody anywhere" Conor McGregor, you know, we love the warrior mentality thing anymore. It's not going to happen. He's not going to chase titles in other divisions. And I mean, he might do that, but just he's not going to, like, grind it out to fight through opponents to get there.
Man, you and I sat at the UFC 209 weigh-in waiting for Khabib Nurmagomedov to show up, just kind of laughing, you know, amongst ourselves, basically reading the writing on the wall that, uh-oh, man, I mean, his manager won't make a comment about where he's at. There are reports that he's been hospitalized. There's no way this fight's going to happen. And looking back on that, that messed things up so bad.
It really did.
I mean, if Khabib goes out there and then they have this great fight and whoever wins, now they have like, now they've got adrenaline. The cameras are on them. They call out Conor. At least there would be a story there to, you know, to. Now it's just like everything is so on hold. Khabib's not coming back until August or September is what his manager told me today. Tony is out there kind of saying like, well, it ain't my fault and I did my job, but yeah, that's true. And we all respect you for it, Tony, but that doesn't create buzz. So there's just no buzz.
No, like so the thing is if Conor and Floyd falls apart and it doesn't happen and Conor needs somebody to fight in September or October, like, yeah, I guess Tony Ferguson would be the logical person. Now, obviously what they try to do is do Nate Diaz again or something like that. But if you want to defend the lightweight title, I guess it'd be Tony Ferguson and they could make that fight and it would be interesting and I think it'd be a really good fight and I actually think Ferguson would win. But you don't have the same like excitement for it as if Ferguson would have gone out and beaten Nurmagomedov and had that, as you said, that big moment, that big spotlight to then say, I'm the guy. I just solidified it. I'm the guy in the division. If Conor's coming back, it's me.
Yeah.
And you just don't have that to build on. So it just changes everything about like what about the landscape that Conor could come back into if he did have to come back to UFC right now and not take this big boxing opportunity that he has on the horizon. That brings us to another interesting development, and I think it ties into a lot of different things. We mentioned on the show last week, David Haye.
Here we go.
Jimmy Manuwa.
Here we go.
Jimmy Manuwa won his fight, and then instead of calling out somebody in the light heavyweight division like Jon Jones or the winner of Cormier and Johnson next week, he decides to call out boxer David Haye.
Brilliant. Smart
sure.
move.
Yeah. It would probably be the biggest money fight he could do. There is a lot of boxing MMA crosstalk right now. Manuwa has huge hands and huge power. So it's interesting. We got in the argument that it couldn't be on the undercard of the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight because they'd make too much money. It just wouldn't make sense. And for several other reasons, it just wouldn't work out. But according to David Hay, somebody, and he says the UFC, I don't know if that's true, somebody contacted him about potentially being on the undercard of the Conor and Floyd fight. Do you just not believe it?
I don't believe it at all. I don't. He's, first of all, and I'm not going to pretend to have a whole lot of knowledge on this, but when did he shred his Achilles?
In his last fight.
It was not that long ago.
Yeah, in March, in the beginning of March.
Dude, you don't just come back. You don't just come back from the shredded Achilles.
I don't think it's fully torn.
Okay, a partially torn Achilles.
Yeah. He's rehabbing.
Yeah. I'm sure that he's having serious fight negotiations.
But wouldn't that...
3 weeks after partially tearing his Achilles.
Wouldn't that be pretty gangster to come back and be like, I'll beat you with a partially torn Achilles?
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to do that. I maintain exactly what I said last week, that David Hay makes millions of dollars even when he fights opponents that nobody has heard of. And we just talked about how difficult it would be to split up the money on this pay-per-view, and now they're going to add a guy who is going to demand millions of dollars.
Right, but if the pool is $500 or $600 million, like we've talked about, to throw like $5 million at him and $2 million at Manoa is not that much.
Dude, every cent counts when you're talking about Floyd and Connor and the UFC. And honestly, here's a question. If you put David Hay and Jimmy Manoa on the undercard, how many pay-per-views does that add? And I understand that David Hay is...
I think if
David Hay's big where he's from. You know, he's got the European fan base. Manoa as well. That's not going to add any pay-per-view buys.
You are dismissing my call for this fight to be on the undercard once again, and I don't appreciate it, but I think you're right about the fact that maybe it's also him trying to be in the headlines, just like we've seen with Floyd and Connor. He is hurt, so I don't know how he'd make that come back so quickly. But it is interesting. I think if somebody had contacted him, that's the interesting thing, to find out whether somebody has called him or not, because that would indicate that we are further along in negotiations than we thought.
Well,
if they're already talking to people about potentially being on the undercard.
It is worth noting that Connor's agent also represents Jimmy Manoa.
Right.
That's worth noting.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't make it all that relevant to me or significant.
Well, we will find out what the development is next week, because somebody will say something or somebody will do something.
And we'll fight about it again next
week. We'll have something else to talk about as far as that fight goes. When we come back, she's back, maybe. Ronda Rousey stuff on the way.
MMA Insider Show. Yeah, yeah. It's time for the MMA Insiders.
Here we go. Broadcasting through the treacherous, windy conditions. We're trying to... It's really not that bad. It looks fine right outside the studio. Adam Hill, Brett Okamoto here with you, the MMA Insiders, as we are each and every Thursday night right here for an hour from 6 to 7. Make sure you tune in to check out what is going on in the world of MMA, and we are talking some Conor Floyd, of course. We'll have a little bit of that each and every week. But anytime Ronda Rousey does something, there is news. And I think people overreacted to this one a little bit, but who knows? We'll get Brett's take on it. Ronda Rousey is apparently working with a new nutritionist. She's back.
Yeah. Yeah.
No way. You're not buying this.
I think I am. Well, I had started thinking about Rousey coming back before this guy came out on Instagram and said he was working with her.
No way.
And I started to change my mind a little bit. And I was like, you know what? I'm starting to think that she will fight again. And then I saw this, and this does almost nothing to my opinion. It doesn't really up it or lower it, but I'm saying that I'm kind of leaning towards it now, man. I really am. I think she will fight at least one more time.
Wow. So you think maybe it'll be she wants to go out on a win, so she has to come back and fight again? I guess the question would be, do you think she's going to give it one last run, or you just think she's going to come back for one last fight? Because you say at least one more time.
One more fight can turn into one more run. I just, you know how like sometimes when you fail so miserably at something, it's almost like it removes the pressure. Like let's say this is going to be kind of a weird example, but let's say like you go and you're playing on a new softball team and it's like really, really, really great players. You're like, all right, I just got to not embarrass myself here. You know, these are all guys I don't know. I got to do well. And you get up and like, let's say you just strike out on your first at bat. Like they're just miserably, like slow pitch softball. You strike out and you're like, oh my God, that was awful. But it's almost so bad that it's like, it just removes all of the pressure because you're like, well, I mean, now it's just, because now you just go and do it because it can't get any worse. I'm not suggesting that that's what could happen with Rob, but I'm saying it could.
It could get
it
worse.
It could.
But
how could it get any worse than what happened?
It could happen again. Because you.
But
you
who cares? At that point, if it happens again, who cares?
Because if you go, so under, I'll just carry out to your analogy. So you're like, wow, what just happened? I can't believe I just struck out. And you said the pressure's gone. But at the same time, if you walk away and you're like, I'm not going to hit again. You just be like, I had a terrible at bat. That sucked. I ran into a great pitcher. I don't know what happened.
slow pitch softball.
Yeah, it was they spun it. They put some spin on it, some wind. But I'm good. I'm not going to go up there again. But you at least have that, like, because people, Amanda Nunes had so much power, and it was Ronda hadn't taken a punch in a year. There was a whole bunch of reasons why what happened in retrospect. But if it goes and happens again, because I think you can see both sides. I'm not saying your point is wrong. But at the same time, I think there is a mentality of like, I at least have some reasons I can go out and like, all right, this is why that happened, and I don't have to go out there and do it again to show that it would have been better.
I'm actually pretty fascinated by this. So you think that if she came back, there would be more pressure on her than there was in December? Because to me, I can't imagine a situation where there was more pressure. She didn't talk to anybody. Everybody was so mysterious.
But would she do that again though too?
I think she would talk to people.
That's interesting. But again, so here's what it was. It was a guy, Dan Garner, I believe his name is. He's a nutritionist, works with, he's not like a super prominent person around. He has some mid-level clients in the MMA world. But people immediately said, oh, he posted on social media that he's working with her. She's a new client, and he looks forward to the challenge or, you know, working whatever he said. And everybody said, well, that means she's coming back. It could also mean she's trying to get in shape for a movie.
Of course.
Or something. Like, this doesn't necessarily mean anything.
No.
But it is of course, anytime anything happens with Rousey, it becomes big news. Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing to think about. I don't think there'd be more pressure on her, but I think if she failed in the same manner, then I think it removes all, like, anything you said about what happened last time, it just
I think she would get a
that.
Very different opponent. I don't think
of course she would.
She wouldn't be fighting an Amanda Nunes anymore.
Yeah, but and I said and I'll continue to say I think Ronda Rousey is a favorite over most of the division, and I think she beats most of the division. Nunes is a bad matchup, and I think for all those reasons you look back and say, well, this is she hadn't taken a punch in a year. She went and she fought against one of the biggest strikers in the division, and it changed the fight right away when she took a punch. She was gun shy, all those things, and you can look at the reasons why that happened. And I think she could be retired and think that herself and say, yeah, there was a lot of reasons why that happened, but I'm good. I proved myself. I can go away. So I don't think there'd be more pressure, but I think if the same result occurred, then all of those reasons for what happened are gone.
If the same result occurred, all that happens is what's going to happen now. You know? I mean, she's kind of disappeared anyway. And I know that she signed a few little things here. She's popped up on television show. Like someone was saying that they were, she signed some kind of cameo on a television show. I don't know. I don't always
Prison Breaker. Some
exactly.
Some weird show.
I don't always keep up with her Hollywood stuff, but
a lot of it doesn't end up happening.
A lot of it doesn't end up
you're
happening
right.
though.
That's correct.
So, what's going to happen with her now? She's just going to disappear anyway. So if she has any inclination, just a tad bit to say like. That was so terrible. It wouldn't go that bad again, and it's almost like it just sets the foundation so low that it's like it as lame as this is for her to post a J.K. Rowling quote on her Instagram. What was it? And so from rock bottom is the foundation of what you rebuilt your life. But it's kind of it almost makes sense because that was rock bottom. I mean, to not talk to the media, to walk in there with a mean scowl on your face and then just get whooped like that and then to run out of the building, that's rock bottom. That publicly from where she was is rock bottom. So why not do it again? Why not do it again against an easier opponent, you know, and then maybe turn some stuff around where you like you know, the endorsements start coming back. The money comes.
So.
I mean, you know, she's getting paid when she comes back and fights at any time.
Yeah.
I think she fights again.
I certainly hope that's the case, and we shall find out if the new nutritionist means anything. But the other option, we keep hearing talk about WWE. That makes a lot of sense. If she doesn't,
yeah.
If she doesn't compete again, WWE is a logical step. She's always loved it. She's done it. She was at WrestleMania in 2015. I don't really follow that stuff that closely, but I think she appeared at that WrestleMania. Stephanie McMahon, once again this week, came out and said, hey, I know she's under contract, and I can't necessarily talk about her, but I think she'd be great.
Like, yeah.
That would be the next option, right? Because I think a lot of Hollywood stuff was based on her being a great fighter and destroying everyone.
Yeah.
And she's not a good actress. We've seen that.
Yeah.
So she could work on it, I guess, but if those offers are dried up, WWE is like the logical step if she's not fighting.
That's true, I guess. And that is something that I always forget about WWE because I don't think about WWE that much, but I guess that would be a reason why she wouldn't come back is because she would find another avenue, you know, something that she loves. And, you know, that would take up her time and her energy and would pay
always,
her very well.
She's always liked WWE more than fighting anyway.
Oh, she loves it. I mean, yeah. she just shows up at random shows, like small shows in California. That's how she spends her time.
Yeah, and one of her, you know, roommate slash training partner slash friends, Shayna Baszler, has already switched over and made that move. And I think some of her other friends are also doing the same thing after, for some reason, I don't know, not improving in their MMA career. I don't know why that happened. Maybe the same coach would be the logical answer.
They didn't really get much better, did they?
No, they really didn't. Shocking how that happens. All right, we will talk about people who actually are competing right now as we look at potentially a fight that could happen again down the road. I saw a comment from Alexander Gustafsson that I thought was interesting, but I think could also be true. He said, "John Jones is one of those fights I think everybody wants. It's a hard choice because you have the belt and you have Jones. Jones is a true champion in my eyes. There's no one like him, and to beat him would be as big as being the world champ." I mean, I think in this division in particular, that is true. I mean, John Jones has never been beaten as champion. He lost the title, we know, and I think it's justified that he lost the title because there's been, you know, so many speed bumps along the way for him getting back into competition. So, I just thought this was interesting, and it struck me that Alexander Gustafsson would say, yeah, it's one thing to pursue the belt, but right now John Jones doesn't have the belt, and he is kind of the champion of the division, so that win would be just as big as winning the title. Ideally for him, obviously he'd do both. Jones would get the title and Gustafsson beat him, but I think that's an interesting comment from somebody to admit that, hey, that's the guy I'm going for, not necessarily the belt.
Here's why I don't find that extremely interesting is because he's had the opportunity to say that before. And I feel like, in you working in the media, you understand this, and I think any listener out there can understand this, these guys get asked the same questions over and over again. And every time Gustafsson does an interview, he's probably asked, like, well, what would mean more to you, the belt or fighting John Jones again? You know, because that John Jones fight was so iconic and great. And so finally, I think he's just saying, yeah, okay, fine, it's John. Because, you know, when you remember when he fought Daniel Cormier for the title, he was saying a completely different story because the opportunity was right in front of him. He was getting the title shot. He says, no, John Jones is not the real champion. Daniel Cormier is the real champion. Now he's not fighting for the belt, and he's saying John Jones. So I'm not saying that, like...
So it's more of a quote of opportunity?
Yeah, well, I'm not even saying that because I think Alex is one of those guys who doesn't really care about quotes right. of opportunity, you know? He's getting asked this question over and over again. You know, he's got a fight booked against Glover Teixeira. He's starting to do interviews, and everyone's asking him, like, oh, what would you want more, you know? And I think at this particular time, sure, maybe he'd like John Jones. But, you know, he didn't say that when he was fighting for the title, so I just don't really put a whole lot of value in this. I hope that we see that rematch again. I don't see how we couldn't. As long as John Jones comes back to the sport and can actually stay in the sport and fight on a halfway frequent basis, we will see him fight Alexander Gustafsson because it's so obvious that they need to fight again.
Yeah, of course. And really, I mean, there's four guys that are so far. I mean, three of them are way ahead, but there's four guys that are so ahead of the field right now in the division that you would think that he's going to have to fight all of them again.
It's a four-man division.
Right. And so he's going to, you would think, I believe in July he'll fight either Cormier or Johnson. And then if Gustafsson beats Teixeira, that fight would make sense afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think the fight is going to happen. And if Jones wins, then Gustafsson will get his wish, and he'll be able to get both of those at the same time and knock those both out. But, yeah, that was what Alexander
I would
Gustafsson
love to
said.
See that rematch, by the way.
Gustafsson
no way,
and Jones?
In no way am I saying, like, oh, I'm not I'm not hyped up by what Gustafson said, but if that if and when that fight ever gets booked, I will be very hyped for it. I love that fight.
Did you have Gustafson winning last time? Do you remember?
I think when I was watching it live, I may have scored it 48-47 for Gustafson, and then I went back and watched it, and I was like, no, it was 48-47.
That's Jones. What I had for Jones, for sure, too. But it was a very close fight, competitive fight, and one that changed with one big shot by John Jones that Gustafson was on his way. It looked to maybe winning the title, and then one of the better fights of John Jones' career, actually, one of the more competitive ones, was a thriller, and maybe we'll get to see that again late this year. That's a possibility if things break the right way. Well, one fight card at least that we think we're going to see is the Bellator card in New York in June. It's a pay-per-view. We talked about this last week. The main event in Komen. Are you already tired? You're worn out?
No, this is the... did you watch that press conference?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There was a press conference in New York where Chael Sonnen was trying to promote Bellator's pay-per-view, and they beamed in Vanderlei from wherever he was. I'm not sure where he was, actually. But
I don't know where he is ever.
They beamed him in from satellite. Chael said that he was in the men's restroom of, what was it, a shelter in Brazil or something?
Yes.
And the entire time, they wouldn't silence Vanderlei's mic. So the entire time anybody was saying anything, you could just hear Vanderlei going, it was really great, actually.
It was a fairly weird press conference in a lot of ways. Chael was kind of being old Chael.
He was doing what he had to do.
Right. He's selling the fight, and we talked about it last week, but it is Chael Sonnen and Vanderlei Silva, which is a long-talked-about fight back to the UFC days, a big rivalry between them, and they will finally fight, we think. I mean, there's every bit of chance that either or both of these main event fights fall off the card. And Mitrione and Fedor, which we were supposed to have just last month, and it fell apart the day of when Matt Mitrione, quote-unquote, got kidney stones. But...
quote unquote.
Yes. But we will see that one again on pay-per-view. They have started to add other fights to the card, but they also announced the price. First of all, $50 for the HD version of the fight. I think we already discussed that. We thought
ambitious.
We thought it should be like a $20 to $30 price tag.
Yeah.
They come out with $50 for the HD. What did you think when you heard that?
I just think it's a bad idea to do pay-per-view in general. And I was saying this on my own podcast this week, and like, I just assume that sometimes with these promotions is that there's got to be accountants and these guys in the back rooms, you know, who just crunch numbers and have data, and they don't make a decision like this unless they know it's going to be a success. But I just don't see how the numbers can add up on this. And the risk that you're taking with the potential fights falling apart, the potential fights not being good fights as well. I just feel like Bellator had been in this great place where it was getting a lot of positive press lately. They'd been signing some entertaining guys. You know, it just felt like Bellator was like, people were behind it. And now you're asking people to spend $49.95 on a card that, I'm sorry, is not worth that. It's not. And this is not like a hit on Bellator. I even said, I was talking to another media member about this, and I was like, you know what? If you put it up against what the UFC has put on pay-per-view this year, it actually matches up fine. UFC 208 and 209 have not been good either. But UFC is a pay-per-view company. People understand that, and they expect it. They know that every month they're gonna be asked to pay for this product. With Bellator, you're introducing this new, and then you're saying it's $49.95, and I just think it's a bad idea, and it is opening them up to a situation in which, if this thing is a disaster, then all of that positive press, it just vanishes.
But now you have Douglas Lima and Lorenz Larkin.
It's a great fallback plan. NYC, Madison Square Garden, Douglas Lima making the walk last. That's a great backup plan. And again, I'm not just crapping on Bellator here. These are great fights on free television, but they're not pay-per-views.
And you got Michael Chandler on the card as well. I mean, you've got Chandler is the lightweight champion who is, I still think, a very good fighter. I think he's entertaining. He's fun to watch. It's exciting that he's on the card. Again, when he's headlining a Spike TV card, you're like, this is awesome. I have to watch this.
Yeah.
When he's potential, again, he's the third fight on the card, but if something happens to the co-main or main or very possibly both, I think we can say, like, there's a good chance both fights, something happen. And he ends up in the main event, or as you said, Douglas Lima and Lorenz Larkin, end up in the main event, then you've got, then you're in real jeopardy.
I want to put that. I also do want to point out that it could end favorably for them. You know, Chael and Vanderlei could make it to the fight. They could sell it well. You know, I mean, even Vanderlei, even though he's awkward, like Chael knows how to play off that. You know, Fedor, what if he looks great? You know, what if he's able to turn back time and win a big fight in Madison Square Garden? You got James Gallagher on the card, who's a teammate of Conor McGregor. You have Aaron Pico, a guy who a lot of people have been excited about to see. So what
those
if...
Those are things after the purchase, though.
I know.
Like, that's best-case scenario. If people buy it, and then they get very entertained by something that's a great card. But I think what you're asking is for people to hope that's going to happen in order to put their $50 out there.
But at least you're going... I agree with you, but at least then, if all that happens, then you're going to be like, oh, I should have paid the $49.95. You know, look at everything that happened. Everybody's talking about this and that, and it was a great night. I should have just paid the $49.95. If Bellator gets that, then it's a win for him.
The other problem with that is that this is not the plan. It's not that they're going to do pay-per-views all the time, which is good. They're going to do them again in the future. But how often can you put together, like, you're just throwing everybody you have.
Yeah, watered down schedule the rest of the way.
So then you have your TV cards are going to suffer greatly around that. And then your only hope is to then, you know, kind of put these same guys on the next pay-per-view. And how many times can you go to the well with the same guys who we know can't consistently bring that?
It's like UFC in like the 90s.
Yeah.
But they're competing with the UFC. You know? I just don't see how they are a pay-per-view company.
Yeah, but again, they're making signings and they're spending money to the point where they almost have to, because they have to have some sort of revenue model outside of Spike. So I guess, like, what happens if you start signing these guys and putting together a pretty good roster? You have to look at the other side and say, well, now we've got guys like Ryan Bader that potentially down the road could be on this, and you know, other guys that we can sell, but we've spent this money and now we can't just be on Spike TV because we have to make back the money that we've paid all these guys. So it's a tough situation for them to be in. I think it's a fun card on paper to think about. If these fights all happen, I'd be interested in watching it. I will be, of course, I'll be watching it. I'll be covering it, but it's ambitious. I think this is the first word you said. I think that's fair. And then I think the follow-up is the big question. If everything goes well for you, then what? And that's what they have to look at, and that's what you have to hope for Bellator, for their long term success, that can all come together.
I think they want the big night feel. I think, obviously,
and you're going to the Garden, you're going to get that.
Obviously, you want people to buy your product, and you want, you know, to meet a certain quota and to make numbers match up. But I think overall, what they want is this big event. You know, we were the summer event. Do you think it hurts them at all that 2 weeks later is the UFC's card in International Fight Week?
Especially if it, you know, the way it's starting to shape up, of if it's like this massive card.
And you know it will be. I mean, they're going to put their best foot forward, and that's 2 weeks.
Well, it hurt them even more if Conor and Floyd fought on June 10th, which is not going to happen. But
yeah.
If that were to, for some reason, to come together, yeah, that would hurt.
No.
Yeah, that would hurt. If you have that 2 weeks before and...
Scrap it.
And
cancel.
The fight week card two
Calling
weeks
it
later.
Off. Calling it
yeah,
off.
Yeah, that would be very difficult. But yeah, it looks like the fight week card, as always, it's always great. But it looks like it's going to be really good this year, as always.
I think those 2 weeks are significant. You know, it's tempting to say, oh, you know, that nothing's going on in the UFC that week. Well, if GSP is coming back on July 8th, you know, if John Jones is potentially coming back, we don't know what's headlining that card yet. I anticipate Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw fighting on that card, and Cody's been very popular. TJ is actually, I think he's pretty popular these days. No. His popularity has risen.
Verdum Overeem, was that?
Yes, Verdum
just got announced.
Verdum Overeem is on that card. So I think that 2 weeks seems like maybe a lot. Like, oh, you know, I think knowing that another big UFC pay-per-view is coming 2 weeks later, that's a challenge in itself.
Yeah, that'll become difficult. So one last thing to hit on before we get into just a grab bag of topics at the very end is Bellator is going to be on Spike tomorrow with, I don't know, I don't know how to sell the fight or talk about the fight. I think the build-up has been more fun than the fight could be, but King Mo and Rampage going at it.
Ugh.
I feel like you're in the same boat as me. I mean, it's been... It was fun to be on the conference call and just hear their back and forth a little bit. I mean, it's the same stuff, but I always think it's... you know, when they're talking, it's kind of interesting.
Is it?
Did you, first of all, Rampage said he didn't know what weight the fight was being contested at.
Yeah.
I don't know if I bought that or not. It looks like, I mean, he said he thought it was a 235 catch weight and that he thinks his trainer was just fooling him to believing that, so he got into some kind of shape.
That would actually be pretty brilliant, by the way.
Looks like he's about 260. Did I see?
Well, yeah, he weighed in today. I think it was 253.
253. Okay. So, yeah, I couldn't remember if it was 253 or 63. So 253 is pretty big for a guy who fought, you know, fights at 205 for the most part.
Yeah.
And has already kind of had his conditioning and his shape questioned at times.
Yeah.
He's taken a couple heavyweight fights already, but that seems a little bigger than ideal for him to come into a fight.
Yeah, I think when he fought Satoshi Ishii at heavyweight, I think he weighed, and don't quote me on this because I can't quite, but I think it was in the 30s. It was 230s.
Yeah.
So he's put on 15, 16 pounds since then. And I just don't have any interest in this fight whatsoever. I thought the first fight was pretty bad, and I think stylistically, the fight's going to play out exactly the same way. Mo's going to try to take him down, have limited success. It's going to be bunched up against the cage the whole time. Rampage is going to land some like little short knees while Mo is like, you know, going after his single leg, and it's going to be 15 minutes of that. Like that's what the first fight really was, and I think that's what this fight will be. And I don't know, man. You guys who are like, oh, this has been good fun buildup. I don't see that at all. I don't. It's such fabricated trash
compared
talk.
To the fight.
It's such fabricated trash talk, which I know it always is, but it's bad fabricated trash talk. Why is Rampage not fighting Fedor? Why is that not the fight?
I don't know. it's a weird one, and I guess Rampage also said that he wishes he would have never become a fighter, which is also interesting. He just would have gone into the construction business. I don't believe that either.
I don't believe that for a second.
I don't believe it for one second. He's not the kind of person to me that would just embrace being a construction worker.
No.
Or being in the construction business.
He's one of those guys who just kind of says whatever, and he's pretty heavily influenced by however he's feeling at that point in time. So that kind of almost to me suggests where his head is at going into this fight. I mean, obviously, of course it would. The guy's saying he wishes he never would have gotten into cage fighting the week of he's about to be in a cage fight.
Right.
That can't be good.
You got a question where his head is or if he's just saying stuff to just say it. Who knows with Rampage sometimes. But that fight is tomorrow, Spike TV. I'll be writing about it. Are you going to even cover it?
Yeah.
So check out my coverage and Brett's coverage. I'll be up at coveringthecage.com and on Twitter at Adam Hill OVRJ. Brett is at ESPN.com. Is it B Okamoto ESPN?
Yep, that's
there
correct.
You go on Twitter. So follow along. I'm sure you'll have great tweets about the fight. It'll be wonderful. And when we come back, grab bag time.
MMA Insider Show. It's time for the MMA Insiders.
All right, let's wrap it up with a little grab bag. Check out some quick hitters of things that are going on in the world of MMA. Adam Hill and Brett Okamoto here, the MMA Insiders. And the first thing I wanted to talk about, because I would be terrible, but we are seeing another reality show for Paige VanZant. She's going on the Celebrity Edition of Chopped. First of all, have you ever watched Chopped before?
Oh, yeah.
Could you be on it? Because for those that don't follow it, it's three different rounds. The appetizer round, main event round, dessert round. But you basically just, they throw ingredients at you, and you're like, all right, what am I going to make out of this?
Well, I do like to cook.
I can't, so that's a difference.
But it depends what's in the box, man. When the basket, that's what they call it, the basket. I went through like a little binge watching of Chopped, and there were some baskets where I was like, I had a great idea, and then there were other ones where I was like, oh my God, what are they going to make out of this?
I don't know.
It would
can't
all
make
depend
anything.
On my basket.
Like, I can barely put soup from a can into like a pot and like heat it up.
Really?
Yeah, I'm awful.
I don't know. When I hear people say that, it kind of confuses me because I think cooking is like a pretty easy thing to do.
God, not me. I try it. I'm so helpless, but I'm so helpless in everything. I can't fix anything. I can't do it. Like, a light bulb will go out and be like, oh no, I hope it's not like a tricky one.
Dude, essentially all cooking is chopping something up, putting olive oil in the pan, dropping that chopped thing up into the pan, and then putting salt on it. That's literally what cooking is.
Okay, what's olive oil? So you've already lost me. Well, how do you know the proper? How do you know how long to cook something, or like the proper things to match with something?
You just take a spoon and pull some of it out of it.
This
it.
Sounds way too complicated for me. Apparently, the appetizer round features a strange flavor of soda and a cheesy dish. Right now, I'm just like, I don't even know, what does that even mean? I mean, obviously there'll be other things with it, but I don't even know, like, a starting point of what happens there.
Well, I'm sure they gave her some protein. They had to have given her some kind of protein.
Okay.
So let's say it was like, you know, it's difficult to know without all the ingredients, but with the, what was the drink thing?
A weird flavor of soda.
Okay, so you just make that into a little sauce. You take the, I mean, cheese.
How would you make soda into a sauce? Like, put it in a pot or pan?
Yeah. Yeah. And then just add some sugar to it, maybe some fruit. Give it, like, some kind of tangy, fruity kind of flavor. Who make knew? A gastric out of it.
Who knew? Brett was such an expert chef. All right, well.
I watch a lot of Chopped.
We're gonna check out. You know, Cofield loves Chopped as well. He watches it all the time. So we'll check out what happens with Paige Van Zandt on Chopped.
When does that run, by the way?
Tuesday. Next Tuesday?
Okay.
It's actually four straight weeks of celebrity versions of Chopped, and then the four winners compete for the grand prize at the end for charity. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how she does. Of course, she famously was on Dancing with the Stars last year, went to a second-place finish on that, so we'll see how she does on this reality show. Does that mean... I mean, she's basically on her way out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think she's a talented young fighter, and I think she likes doing it. But at some point, there's probably a ceiling on her as a fighter.
Well, that's like an interesting question, because does her talent and other things actually make her a worse fighter? Probably, because it just means that she's not desperate to be a great fighter. And I think a lot of great fighters are at one point or another desperate to be one.
Right. So we will see what she does. She has obviously a lot of opportunities out there in the world. Talked about at the end of the last show, but we see the main event for Oklahoma City, Kevin Lee, Michael Chiesa.
Yeah.
Good fight.
I like it.
I'm excited. I saw a lot of people already tweeting back at me saying, how is that a main event? That sucks. I actually think it's a pretty good fight. And you've got BJ Penn on the card as well, which we talked about. We're not comfortable with it, but I think that's a good fight. And I think
BJ and Johnny Hendricks, right?
Johnny Hendricks is on there too, yeah.
All right. So fight night card, what more do you want? I mean, Chiesa is very highly ranked. And Kevin Lee is a guy who has been flying under the radar, but we know him locally, obviously.
Won eight of his last nine, four fights in a row.
Great talent. So, yeah. And both these guys are just go-getters. I mean, it should be an action fight.
And again, it's what the fight night card should be for, showcasing a guy. Like, people are saying, Kevin Lee's not ready for a main event. Well, at what point is he going to be? Like, yeah, he's not ready to main event a pay-per-view, yeah. But he's won eight of his last nine fights. He's on the fast track to be, you know, a top contender.
Yeah.
So get his name out there in a really good fight. If he wins, he will be kind of into that next strata and ready to for even bigger fights.
Yep.
Down the road. Real quick, we'll just look ahead to next week. Not really get in too deep, but preliminary thought: which way are you leaning in the main event, Cormier and Johnson?
I'm leaning Cormier pretty hard, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll have that, and then I'll go back and rewatch film, and I'm like, what was I thinking? I'll pick the other guy, but I'm leaning pretty hard Cormier.
I'm actually leaning Johnson. We'll get into that a little bit more if we're able to talk about the fight next week. And then in 10 seconds, why is Andre Arlovsky fighting?
Because fighters fight, man, and Andre Arlovsky is a fighter.
I don't need to see that. He's fighting Marcin Tybura in June. I don't need to see that one, but we'll have plenty of time to talk about that as the fight gets closer. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Follow at Adam Hill LVRJ, at B Okamoto ESPN, the MMA Insiders each and every Thursday night here. Check us out online as well. We will talk to you next week.
MMA Insider Show.